Welcome to Slowpreneur, a podcast about building a business without the busy. I'm your host, Stephanie Pellet, and I'm a coach for thoughtful, values-based entrepreneurs just like you. On this show, we talk about creating a business with intention, heart, and sustainability in mind. Join me as I connect with my friends and clients and share my own reflections on why slow and steady entrepreneurship will always win the race. On today's episode, I'm sharing 7 hot takes about online business. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to Slowpreneur. I am Stephanie Pellet. I am your host. If you are new here, this is the podcast where we talk about how to have a sustainable and intentional business without the busy. And if you've already been a fan of the slowpreneurship lifestyle for a while, thanks for tuning in again. I'm really happy you're here, especially because this episode is going to be a little bit spicy. It's going to be spicy. We're going to do some hot takes on business. On online business specifically. We're not talking about your local plumber. You know, we're not talking about the person who sells jam at the farmer's market. They can be left in peace. They can be left alone. We are talking about online business. We are talking about the proliferation of business coaches and experts and gurus and people who are selling you Pinterest courses and YouTube ad courses and Facebook ad services. We're not picking on anyone in particular. We're picking on the entire industry. Okay, I have some thoughts, and I know that a lot of people who are listening today are entrepreneurs themselves, right? So am I, you know, so are all my clients. And I think it's just really important that as consumers and as entrepreneurs, because many of us, all of the people listening probably are both. We consume from others, we buy from others, and we hope that others will buy from us. And so what that means is that it is very easy to fall victim to using some of these sleazy, slimy, scammy tactics that have really become super popular. They've almost become the norm in the online business industry. And we can fall victim to them when we're making purchasing decisions. And we can also fall victim to using them in our own businesses. So what I wanted to do today is basically go through 7 of my hottest takes on business. Online business, what I think you should know, what I would tell someone if we were just sitting down to have a coffee and I was not afraid of letting my true opinions be known. Because I feel like people liked the decanting episode because I was just being super honest. And I have decided that one way for me to feel more like myself in business, which is always my goal, and I hope your goal, is to just be more of myself in business, right? So we're going to do that. We're going to do these 7 spicy takes on online business. This is coming from a business coach who is admittedly quite disillusioned by the business coaching industry. I have had quite a few of my own crises of faith in the last few years, questioning whether what I'm doing is actually supportive to people, questioning how I can support people better. I have over the years made a lot of transitions, including pivoting away from doing consulting work because I ultimately found that while it was, you know, profitable to come into a business and note all the things that could be done better or offer suggestions for improving based on their goals, what I was noticing is that nobody would then implement anything that I suggested. And that was not satisfying for me. And it made them feel probably pretty bad about themselves, right? They got this consultant to come in and give them advice, and then they weren't implementing it. So they weren't making these updates. And so I don't like doing things that I don't feel good about. Right? I don't want to offer a service if I don't think it's genuinely helpful. And so long story short, over the years, I've moved more to a model where I'm working with you. I'm creating space for you and accountability for you to meet your goals. We do that in the Profoundery through our productivity parties. I just created a new session type called a power hour, where I will essentially get on a call with you and do things for you, build out your automations and your newsletter templates and all of that good stuff. Because basically I'm seeing that there's a need for more momentum and accountability and motivation, more so than more knowledge. You know, I do think that there's always going to be a place for coaching, for getting to the root of an issue, for figuring out if there's a limiting belief in your way. However, I don't think that we need to spend all of our time in the thinking and the talking about things. I think sometimes it's more useful to move into the action and the doing. So my point is that, yes, I am a business coach. However, I'm a little disillusioned by the industry. I don't think it's perfect, and I don't think that it's the be-all, end-all. I don't actually think that every single person needs a business coach. I really don't. So here we go. We're going to do our 7 hot takes about business, and we're going to start with 1, probably my favorite. Is it a business, or is it a multi-level marketing scheme? Is it a pyramid scheme? Y'all, is it a business or is it a pyramid scheme? Okay, we're going to start with that framework in our minds because I think that we spend a lot of time online interacting with businesses that are essentially multi-level marketing schemes. This can be these high-up coaching people who sell really expensive courses and then literally have people in their downline who are affiliates for their course and are being paid quite a lot of money to get other people into the course. And it's just this cycle that continues. To me, that's kind of MLM-y, right? You know, I do think there's a fine line. Sometimes affiliate marketing is really great because you get a kickback for sharing something that you genuinely love. And I think that's awesome. But I think that sometimes when the rewards get so big, that reward for sharing becomes its own motivation for sharing, right? If you're getting paid thousands of dollars for getting someone into a course or a program, then it starts to kind of shift your motivation a bit. It starts to become a little bit closer to a multi-level marketing scheme than to basic affiliate marketing. That's just my opinion. Then we also have people who are teaching about something that they haven't actually ever really learned to do themselves. So I mentioned earlier the idea of a Pinterest course, okay? But the problem is that some of these business models are so circular. Right? This person has not actually used Pinterest to be successful with marketing, let's say, like their dog grooming business or, you know, their wedding planning service. They've used Pinterest to be successful because they're teaching other people how to use Pinterest to be successful. Do you understand where I'm going here? There isn't actually like proven merit to their process because of course people are searching for how to use Pinterest to be successful in their own industry. Of course they want that knowledge. But if someone is teaching you based on their limited experience of only using this product to teach other people how to use this product, that is not actually a very accurate representation of their skills or abilities. That is an accurate representation of the fact that people are eager for this kind of knowledge, but it becomes this circular self-fulfilling prophecy that the only reason that they are successful with that product or that service is because they're teaching other people how to do the thing that they want to do without actually having ever done it for themselves or another industry. It's actually hard to even explain this one in words because it is so circular, right? But I think you know what I'm saying. If that person hasn't actually shown their skills in another industry of using a given tool or framework, then you may want to be careful about listening to them too closely or paying them too much money. The third way that I think that this shows up is when people are interacting with you as if you are only a lead. You're only a number. You're only a prospect for their downline. If we're using MLM language, you know, I have been to events where people, you know, everyone there has paid to be there. It's maybe a workshop or, you know, some kind of networking event. And you feel like you are just meat on the meat market. You feel like you're just, a pig for slaughter because this person is like a shark in the water, like looking for blood. Who can I convince that they need coaching? Who can I convince that they need some kind of healing modality, right? And this may be because they have studied with people who have told them that this sort of constant, always be closing energy is totally fine and totally valid and nobody minds it, especially for people who feel like they genuinely are, you know, offering a service. I can understand why some evangelizing may start happening. You know, I really genuinely think I can help these people. And so maybe that's why you feel, or these people feel enabled to treat everyone they meet as a prospect. But I find it extremely off-putting. And I also find it kind of unethical. I don't think that everyone that you interact with is a potential prospect for your business. And I also personally don't feel comfortable with treating people in that way. I genuinely don't think that everyone is a good fit to work with me, and vice versa, right? It's such a unique decision of who you decide to support you in your life and in your business. And I think that the one-size-fits-all approach of just coming into a space, whether it's because you genuinely have financial pressures of your own, or, you know, I am aware of coaching programs, like I mentioned earlier, where you do a training and then you are beholden to that training's standards, you are beholden to that training's methodologies, and maybe you do have a pressure to bring more people into the course or into the program, right? It's like when yoga studios do yoga teacher trainings and they're just trying to get more money out of their students. It started in a good way. It started with people who genuinely wanted to be yoga teachers, I'm sure, but now has become more like a money grab and more a part of their business model where they have to convince people to become teachers in order for them to sustain their own business model. So I do believe that there is such a thing as unethical business models. I do think that there is a lot of proliferation of MLM-y type tactics. And I think it's super, super important to be aware of, both as a consumer, but also as an entrepreneur. I think it's really important for you to ask yourself whether you do ever perpetuate these kinds of behaviors or frameworks, because they can be extremely harmful. And if you are a consumer, just watch out. Just make sure that the person you are learning from knows what the heck they're talking about, has proven their mettle in some kind of other industry or with other kinds of clients, and just be very mindful of who you give your money to. I'm not saying that everyone who uses these techniques is a complete charlatan, because I don't believe that. I do think that some of these programs have a lot to offer despite their kind of sketchy business model, but I think it's just really important to take a pause and make sure that you feel good about your decision when you make it. This episode of Slowpreneur is sponsored by The Profoundry, a coaching and community program for thoughtful entrepreneurs run by yours truly. If you've been looking for a supportive group of business besties who share your values and really get it, this could be the perfect membership for you, because these people are truly amazing. Every month in the program, we have a bunch of different calls. For example, productivity parties to get our work done together, workshops on things like project planning, balance and boundaries, or goal setting. And we often do creative think tanks that offer custom group coaching for members for whatever they might be struggling with. We also have a really supportive Slack community with weekly check-ins. We have a resource library full of recordings and interesting workshops, and a business book club so that you can learn about business from interesting and diverse authors. If this sounds like your cup of tea, I'd love for you to come check it out. You can learn more and get your first productivity party pass for free by going to stephaniepellet.com/profoundry. I would love to see you there. Hot take number two, you don't need to invest in yourself that much. Oh, ho, ho. This is a big one. Okay, we see this one a lot, right? And I actually don't necessarily mean this literally. You know, I think there are a lot of ways to invest in yourself. And I do think that some of those ways are valuable, right? Investing in your skills, investing in understanding new programs, investing in software that will support you. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. What I am talking about is when some kind of coach or guru or professional is telling you to invest in yourself and then asking for hundreds or thousands of dollars, right? When they're asking you to quote unquote invest in yourself, invest in working through your blocks, invest in having breakthroughs. That is the kind of investment that I don't actually think we need. You probably don't need another course. You definitely don't need to buy the lifetime subscription to Kajabi just because they're having a special one-time only sale. I'm going to tell you a secret of the industry. All of these sites use cookies. They know when you land on their site. They offer you these special bonus sales, but they will be having another sale. If you go with an incognito window in a couple weeks, probably you can get that exact same sale, okay? That's not always true, but it's true way more often than you think. And if you don't actually even have an online course yet, it's not actually a good investment to get the Kajabi Lifetime membership because you may not even need it. And then that's $700, $800, I don't know how much they charge, hundreds of dollars down the drain, okay? So I think that there is this big push in the online business world towards encouraging you to make these really big investments in your business. And I think where that this is often coming from is someone really, you know, big name in coaching who has trained a bunch of other business people in the tactics that they think are going to be successful. I just want you to make me like a promise. You know, you don't have to, but I really would encourage you to. If you go on a website and they give you one of those insidious messages, if you try to close the page, that's like, oh, are you not ready to invest in yourself? Or there's something about that somewhere on the page. I just want you to do me a favor and close it down. And then, you know, maybe bathe in some like holy water to cleanse yourself of the demonic energy that contains. Okay, I think that this is so harmful. It's so harmful to tell people that they need to spend a certain amount of money in order to be successful. Now we're going back to the MLM thing. We can't really get away from MLMs, okay? This is gonna be a pervasive thing throughout this episode. But really, if you are trying to convince someone to spend thousands of dollars to work with you, when that thousands of dollars really has very little bearing in reality. It has nothing to do with what you actually need for your quality of life. Most likely, it's because someone else charged you, you know, $20,000 or something wildly exorbitant to work with them. And now they're encouraging you to turn around and pass down those prices to your clients in order to make your money back. I believe, this is my own, you know, opinion, but I think pricing should be at least somewhat based in reality. I'm all for, you know, charging what you feel that your work is worth, charging based on the value that you give to someone. I do think historically I undercharge for my services, so I'm maybe not the best person to ask. But oftentimes, if someone is charging you $20,000, I think that there are very, very, very few occasions where that is actually going to be worth it. It's just my opinion. And I think it turns into an MLM if you have spent that because you needed to invest in yourself and now you need to ask other people to invest in themselves and you're using that same language. My opinion is that you can be scrappy. Do you know what costs a lot less than $20,000? A library membership, a library card, going to the library, learning almost anything you want to know from a book. Learning from YouTube. There is so much free education out there. You have no idea. And I know that the free education does not have any shine to it. It's not shiny and cool and it doesn't have like the really slick marketing. I get that. But if you can look past that, some of the biggest, best thinkers in the world have written books with their knowledge and you can get them all for free. Will it teach you everything? No. But will it teach you a lot? Yes, it will. I think that business owners, especially in the beginning, should be as scrappy as they possibly can. Try not to spend money on anything, right? Unless you really feel like you need to. Try to keep your expenses really, really low. Jason Fried had an article once about the difference between successful businesses and non-successful businesses are just the successful businesses can outlast the competition. They can last longer. They keep their expenses low, they keep their profits up, and they can just last longer than the competition, okay? So try to keep yourself scrappy. Try not to upgrade unless you feel that you absolutely need to. Be very, very aware of people trying to sell you magic bullets that they promise will suddenly up your business. And I know what you're thinking. It can feel like, well, if I had Kajabi, then maybe I would have the business of my dreams. Maybe I would have that course. But buying the Kajabi Lifetime membership is not going to buy you the course that you want. Those two things are completely different. What you're going to get is you're going to get an empty framework and an empty system that you will then have to fill. So I think it's a better idea to fill the system first before you even get the system. Make the course. See if there's any interest. See if there's anybody who wants to buy it. Put it on a very scrappy WordPress or Squarespace system that only costs you $20. And then once you outgrow it, once it breaks, once it's no longer working for you, then you can quote unquote invest. Okay? So let's just be very aware. And again, for entrepreneurs, please try not to use this language. I don't think it's actually accurate. I think there are better ways to say what you're trying to say. Number three is that it is not all your fault if your business is not working. This is something that is really hard to remember. It's hard for me to remember. I come up against it all the time. We live in a very hyper-individualistic culture that tells us that we are responsible for our outcomes, right? That's the myth of the meritocracy that we've all lived with. If we are successful, it's because of ourselves. If we are unsuccessful, it's also because of ourselves and our efforts. And I think that it's really important, especially when it comes to business, to be aware of the message that it is all your fault if you're not succeeding. This is also a very classic MLM message. We've been talking a lot about MLMs. We're going to keep talking about them because this is a very typical thing that you would hear if you were in an MLM, that if you are unsuccessful, it's because you're not working hard enough. If you want like a really great primer on multi-level marketing schemes and the techniques that they use, I highly recommend the podcast, The Dream. It's excellent. Came out several years ago, but it is super worth a listen and it will really reveal some of these techniques, and you're going to start to see them everywhere in online business as well. But basically, there's this idea that this product is great, the techniques work. And so if you are not getting lots of people to buy the product or opt into the course or whatever the case may be, that is because of you. Look at all the people above you who have succeeded. Look at everyone who is using this technique and succeeding. If you are not, it is because of you. It is because that you are not doing a good enough job. And so I think it's really, 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 really important to say that there are so many factors that go into business that have nothing to do with you. For example, the economy. For example, the pandemic. These kinds of like massive market forces are often very unpredictable. They are hard to plan for. They are hard to understand when they are happening. You know, I don't think that we knew at the time what the pandemic would do for most small online businesses. In retrospect, we're able to look back and say, wow, consumers actually spent a lot of money online in the months after the pandemic hit. But predictions could have just as easily been that people were not going to spend as much because of the fear and the uncertainty and the panic. So we really don't know most of the time what's going to happen. There may be so many reasons why someone's not spending money. There may be so many reasons why your marketing is just not landing for somebody. It's not all your fault. There are other things going on. And so just, this one's kind of short. It's essentially this idea that if someone is telling you that the reason that something's not working is just because of you, that's probably not true. And that's probably a pretty self-serving statement that will support their business getting to continue business as usual while you struggle to understand what you are doing, quote unquote, wrong. That being said, let's obviously take responsibility. Like, there are things we can do to improve our businesses. There are things that we can do to respond to the market forces that we're seeing. I'm really a huge proponent of test and change. So noticing what's landing, noticing what's not, experimenting, doing lots of little experiments to see what's going to land for people. But just understanding and knowing that if something doesn't work for any particular reason, it's not just because you have suddenly lost your magic touch. It's not because you have suddenly completely forgotten how to do this. There may be other factors going on beyond your control. That actually brings me to number four, which is that nobody knows anything. Or nobody knows almost anything. This is actually an idea I think I first heard from Seth Godin, who obviously is this incredible thinker, incredible marketing voice. He is looked to as the father of online marketing in many ways. And I'll try to find the exact blog post where he wrote it, but he essentially said, nobody knows anything. Nobody knows how things are going to turn out. As I said before, nobody knew what the pandemic was going to mean for our economy necessarily at the time. It's so obvious in retrospect what was going to happen, but in the moment, it wasn't obvious. In the moment we're in now, it's not obvious what's going to work, what's going to land. I don't think any of us could have predicted, you know, the shift towards TikTok. TikTok came out of nowhere, and now it's such a huge thing in our online marketing industry. It's represented a shift towards being more of yourself, being more casual, you know, showing the behind the scenes more, whereas Instagram really encouraged people to be curated and polished and in many ways perfect in the images that they were showing. And so I guess what I'm trying to say here is to let you off the hook a little bit. Nobody knows anything. Almost anything, right? We know certain techniques and things that can support you. We know things that can help you feel more embodied. There are lots of things that don't change, right? How to feed yourself in a way that feels nourishing, or how to set up your morning routine in a way that could be supportive to you. There are definitely things that people know, including me. But what I mean is, nobody knows anything about what's going to happen. Nobody knows anything about what marketing trends are going to look like 3 years from now. Nobody knows anything about what the best practices of business will be in 6 months. We really don't, okay? So when people are promising you that they know exactly what the industry is going to do or exactly what you need to do now to future-proof your business, I promise you they don't. I promise you they actually don't. Nobody knows anything about what's going to happen. We know things about how we can support ourselves right now. And there are many, many industries that this hot take will not apply to. But for those who are encouraging you to invest in yourself because they promise to have all the answers, I promise you, nobody really knows anything about what's going to happen. So just be aware. Number five, you need to start with your product. No amount of marketing or systems or improvements to the way that you talk about your product are going to be helpful if your product itself is not useful to people. And obviously there are exceptions to this. We have already discussed people who are making lots of money with passive income on these courses that are not actually all that helpful. So fine. Let's set those people aside for a moment. If you are a business owner who wants to have an ethical business that genuinely supports people, we need to make sure we're not putting lipstick on a pig. Okay, I know that's a bit blunt. I don't think that any of you are doing that. I'm sure what you're offering is genuinely valuable. But what I'm saying is that before you spend tons of time, money, and energy trying to improve your marketing and your systems and all of that stuff, make sure that the product that you're starting with is genuinely very good, that it genuinely is going to make a big difference for people, whether that is a physical product or a service or a workshop or a course. You want to make sure that your product actually gets people results. It creates a transformation. It creates a benefit for somebody. If we can do that, a lot of the marketing will work for itself. You know, there is word of mouth. There are people who are going to talk about your product. There are people who are going to share about it. But we need to start with the product first. And if I am not clear on what it is that you do, if I don't really understand in a sentence how to tell my friend about your new business, it's not going to be very easy for me to spread the word. It's not going to feel good. It's not going to feel exciting or easy for me. And so I see people getting really hung up on how their website copy looks, or, you know, if they have the perfect delivery system for the PDF download that people are going to get after purchase. But what you really need to make sure is that you're starting with a solid product. You're starting with something that is genuinely going to make a difference for people. And then don't worry so much about getting everything else perfect in terms of your branding before you can launch it. I really don't like seeing people fussing over small things like making sure their business card is perfect if we don't even have a solid product. You can't steer a parked car, as Rob Bell has said before. I love that expression. And in my opinion, the way that you get the car moving is to have a product or a service that is genuinely useful. You need to get out there. You need to actually deliver it, get it into people's hands, see what they think, get their feedback. And then you can worry about all of the nitty-gritty things after the fact. But sometimes we just want to have the shiny parts of a business and we don't actually want to have, you know, the value part of the business figured out first. But that is number one most important thing you need to do. I need to understand it very quickly, what it is that you do, at least in a nutshell, in order for it to be a success. So if you're feeling kind of unsure or you're spinning your wheels or you're stalling, I would encourage you to go back to basics, look at your product and make sure it makes sense, make sure it's actually delivering value. This is not an ad, it's a pause. I've decided to build an intentional break into every episode of Slowpreneur because I know I'm throwing a lot of ideas and hopefully inspiration your way, and I wanted to give you a moment to integrate it. To not have to pay attention, to not have to absorb anymore, to just marinate on what we've talked about so far and take a breath before we continue. Now, let's get back to the show. Speaking of products, let's go to number 6, which is written in my notes like this: passive income will be the death of us all. I think by that I mean the drive and the search and the hunger for passive income. It's going to be the death of us all. We have been bamboozled. We really have been bamboozled by these people who are promising us this dream, this magical dream of passive income that we have all thought suddenly we need to design our whole businesses to get, right? That becomes our one and only goal. How do we design our businesses to ensure that we will end up in a place where we have passive income? I think that it's really worth examining this. And I actually listened to a recent episode of If Books Could Kill, which was an amazing takedown of Tim Ferriss's The 4-Hour Workweek. I really encourage you to go and listen to it because essentially what it was talking about was how the premise of that book is not actually to have a 4-hour work week. It's for you to have a 4-hour work week and put the rest of the labor on people that you are paying very, very little money for the rest of the hours. So essentially your passive income relies on the very active income of other people. This is not always the case. You know, I'm sure there are very few really good exceptions. For example, Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income has a couple website businesses where he has created an ebook and he created the SEO and the articles and set everything up with a payment so that when people search for, you know, learning how to be a security guard or whatever it is he's teaching, they can buy the book and download it. And that is genuinely passive income that I don't think relies on the unfair or exploited labor of other people. So yes, there are exceptions. There are ways that this can work. But very often when people are teaching us how to create passive income, it can either be that it depends on other people for labor, the way that Tim Ferriss was explaining in his book, or it's just kind of a pie in the sky fantasy for many of us who don't have audiences of thousands and thousands of people. Because the way that passive income works is that you need to have these funnels where you're getting tons of eyes on your content, your ebook, your product, your course, and you're funneling towards payment always. So they're coming in through maybe a Google search and then they're ending up with a product. But these are usually pretty low priced products for passive income products. And many of us just don't have the traffic to lead to a successful generative business using this business model. not only that, but the drive and the desire for passive income in this way is also kind of a siren song, I think. It puts our energy in the wrong place. So many of us are so quick to want passive income that we skip all the parts in between. We skip the part where Pat Flynn actually learned how to be an architect. He learned all of the skills that he needed to take the architecture exam. And then he put his skills and expertise and knowledge into the ebook that he wrote about how to take this specific architecture exam. We can't get there right away. We can't get there without a lot of steps in between. And usually when we're just starting out, we don't have the skills or the knowledge to build that website or to wait long enough for it to start generating traffic of its own so that we can actually start to get those passive income sales. Now, if you want to do something like Pat Flynn has done, put your knowledge into an ebook, try to set up, you know, search engine optimization to help people land on it, I am not going to stop you, you know? Please go for it. I think that's a great idea. I think that, you know, I've long thought, do I have a skill that would lend itself to that? So my issue is not with passive income as a concept. My issue is with it being this be-all, end-all idea for so many of us, because I think that most business models don't actually lend themselves very well to passive income. I just don't. I'm sorry. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I hate to be the person who is, you know, telling you this, but I think that most successful businesses have an active component. We can make that active component as fun and generative and nourishing and sustainable as we possibly can. But I don't actually think that for many, if not most of us, it will ever be the case that passive income makes up the majority of our money or our income in our business. I just don't think so. I think many of us have work that requires that personal touch, that connection piece. And I don't think that most of us want to have a fully passive model. Some do. And, you know, you could have an app or a software product that is more passive. But I think that even most of the products that we think of as passive still require maintenance. They still require you to add content to your app. They still require you to add new material to the software product. You know, you need to make upgrades. You need to fix bugs. That's not passive. It might not require you to show up with your face online and talk about it all the time, but it's not going to be passive. And I think that it's really the drive for passivity that gets us all hooked and I think is the most detrimental. So I actually don't think it's a great goal. Y'all can fight me on this if you want. I would love to hear your thoughts, but I think it's not a great goal. I just don't. I think that we're being bamboozled into thinking that it is a great goal. And then we're buying a lot of products to teach us how to do it when most of those people, again with the MLM, haven't actually succeeded in what they're promising us. So I don't know, but maybe avoid passive income. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Bye. Okay, last one for today. My seventh hot take is that business is actually not for everyone. I have worked with a lot of people and I have seen that there is sometimes this expectation or this pressure that we should all be business owners. And I think often this is coming from business coaches who want to, you know, help you transition out of your 9-to-5 or get you to do your soul's work or your most passionate work in the world. And those are, you know, great goals, sure. But I actually don't think that everyone is cut out to be a business owner. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I don't mean that in, you know, this is a club and you can't sit with us. I mean that in a way that I think that there are certain factors that don't work for everyone. You know, if you're somebody who likes financial stability or, you know, your nervous system requires that kind of steadiness in your life instead of fluctuations up and down of income, of energy, of clients, of inquiries, maybe this is not right for you. Entrepreneurship is truly a roller coaster ride. It is very hard emotionally. It brings up all your shit. You know, Sonia always says, entrepreneurial life is a mirror. I've been saying that a lot lately. It really shows you where you need to grow. It really shows you where you're struggling in other parts of your life. Those things are going to show up in your business too. You know, so I really think it's important to check in with yourself before you launch in to thinking that being a business owner is the dream. It's actually not the dream for everybody. The reality of being a business owner is not necessarily a dream. It can be really hard. It can be really demoralizing. It's really difficult to motivate yourself. It's really difficult to be your own boss, to think ahead, to plan. You have to wear a lot of hats all at the same time, right? You have to wear the CEO hat. You have to wear the customer service hat. You have to wear the marketing hat. These are things that usually have entire teams of people working on them in any given business. And you have to do all of it yourself. So I think it's also important to recognize that just because you're good at something, just because you could do something, you don't have to do it. And so you don't have to be a business owner. Even if you currently are, you can go and get a job. You could get a job and be a business owner at the same time. That's okay. Different seasons of your life or different seasons of your business might work better or worse than others. It's not your fault. You don't have full control over what happens in your industry or in the world. And so it's okay. And it's okay if you decide that you want to take a break and come back to it. It's okay if you decide that it's not right for you at all. Business is not for everyone. And I think it's really harmful to act like it is and should be every single person's goal. So be aware. Be aware of people trying to encourage you to go out on your own, quit your job, leave stability behind. Be conscious of whether or not that serves them, right? By keeping you in a coaching relationship or keeping you in some kind of program to ensure their financial success and well-being, to create more financial wellness for them, when it might not actually be the right thing for you. Okay, that was fun, really fun. I kind of feel like a little bit like, you know, you put yourself out there, you say what you really think. I'm very curious to hear whether you agree with me, disagree with me. I have really been enjoying content lately where people just say what they think. I'm so tired of the really curated, seeing all sides kind of content creation, where you're trying to answer everyone's possible complaints before you even say anything at all. I don't think that that's useful. I think it's important to just say what we think. And then I can always have a conversation with you about why that might not be fully true or fully accurate. But these are some of my thoughts. These are the things that I see in my industry that I find harmful or annoying or challenging or just dangerous. And I wanted to speak to them. So as always, would love to hear what you think. Would love to hear your feedback on this one. Would love to hear if you have any hot takes of your own about business, especially online business. Please let me know. And I'm going to leave it here for now, but thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening to Slowpreneur. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend or reach out and let me know at hello@stephaniepellet.com. I would love to hear from you. As always, you can find show notes for this and all episodes at stephaniepellet.com/slowpreneur. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.